Today's program is brought to you by CloudRide, the first vape juice with flavors created by a James Beard award-winning chef. For more information, visit cloudridevapor.com.
I'm Erica Wides, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you started.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
And my name is Souther Teague.
And we have our good buddies in the studio today. I can't believe it's been 5 years. This is like one of those...
I know.
This is like a live-action Facebook flashback thing. You know, like,
Your memories today.
Yeah, man. We got to jump right into it. There's a bunch of...
Delicious looking things on the table.
Yeah, and I don't really I recognize a couple of them. Actually, we should probably start with one of them, which is Underberg.
Yeah, we're gonna have Underberg to start
this
show because
we can't talk about bitters or the new book Amaro without having a little hair of the dog with some Underberg.
Let's go
with Brad Thomas Parsons and Ed Anderson of the Bitters book fame, and now
new book.
You've got the Amaro book that's out.
Yeah,
so, dude, let's
talk.
Yeah, I gotta take this one down.
Oh, my God.
Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back, guys. Great to see you both.
Yeah, likewise. I can't even believe it's been 5 years.
Yeah, you just mentioned that Bitters came out 5 years ago. And you said it was... What was the month it came out in 2011?
It came out November 1st, 2011.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, Amore opened in March 21st of 2011. So just a few months later. It seems like I don't know. That's crazy. That's amazing. I'm happy to hear.
No, the time flew. You know, I was fortunate enough that the book still has some strong legs, and I was doing a lot of promotion and a lot of talking about it, and that's why it took me a while to get to book two, but I'm here we are.
Yeah, man. You got to do a lot of traveling for this book throughout Italy and in Europe, so that's... It made me want to write a book, so I can just do that, you know?
It's definitely... Everyone says... Oh, lucky you! You picked a book about Amaro, so you can go to Italy. You know, the reality is, it's work. You know, it is. You know, I have a day job in publishing, and any time off I take is devoted to research or the book or articles I'm writing. But this was a great trip. Ed and I, who's here with us, we spent about 11 or 12 days doing primary resource interviews, traveling. Obviously, we couldn't hit everywhere, so coordinating that trip was really challenging. You sort of find, okay, so-and-so can meet with us, we're starting here, and then adding people, and someone's only available on a Thursday, and then looking at maps, and we drove the whole time. We didn't take any trains, and...
Mostly Brad drove.
Yeah, yeah, so, exactly. So
you were the taster.
So we started in Torino, which is like the home of vermouth and a lot of Amaro, and the old world, and went to Milano, and traveled across the north to Friuli with our friends the Noninos, and then we didn't make it all the way south, unfortunately. We would have needed another week or so, but we made it to Scoli Piceno to see the Maletti family, and the Varnelli family is not too far from there, and then we wrapped the trip up in Rome. And then in domestically, you know, I did a ton of bartender interviews and producer interviews, and we traveled a lot, and shooting the book, we shot it in Italy, and photography also took place here in New York with you guys both participated respectively, and we shot in Seattle where I used to live, in Chicago, so we got some great bartenders in action and location shots, and the book, you know, Ed really helps bring that book to life when you're looking at a word doc of double space Times Roman, and then you start bringing it to life. So we have a little shorthand style when we work together, And when he's on other shoots, he comes and crashes with me in New York like he's doing now. So I get to see a lot of Ed, which is great. So we've really formed this creative partnership that helps bring the book to life.
Yeah, it's really beautiful on the outside and the inside. I can't wait to dig in.
I've only seen the cover so far and a couple of pages inside. But it's a really beautiful cover, like the photography, just like Bitters, man. It's a beautiful, beautifully shot book. You know, I was just thinking, you know, in the last 5 years, too, that... The books that I see behind, like, pretty much every bar I go into are Bitters and the PDT cocktail book. And they really stand out, I mean, like, design-wise. But then I was thinking about it earlier today on the right here that those two books are not they're not really made for beginners, you know, like, the, like if, for instance, like the recipes that are in the PDT book, have to really like, you have to go for it and like, you have to do all kinds of crazy prep and infusions and things like that. And different, like
very few recipes that are just go make a drink. It's make a thing,
liquor cabinet,
make a thing to make a drink.
It's not just a bunch of stuff you have lying around like classic ingredients. It's like, you got to go make the thing first, like you said. And bitters is the same way, which is really cool. And I think that's why you see so many bars with those books behind them.
They're reference. It's a reference guide.
Yeah, and it's they're inspirational for like new ideas.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of, I mean, as we know, there are plenty of books that have been around for the last 200 years that have, you know, your Martinez and your old fashioned, things like that. And so, yeah, I've definitely taken a lot of inspiration from bitters, so I can't wait to check out tomorrow. But the way I imagine it, it's probably not necessarily like, since with making bitters, you essentially are making an infusion most of the time. But with Amaro, there's actually a distillation process. So is there some information in this book about, like, the production?
Yeah, it really depends. Like, some are distillates and some are using a neutral grain spirit or a wine base or brandy base. So some is distilled again, but a lot of it is maceration and infusion and then adding a sweetener. So it's a similar concept as making bitters, but it's potable. So you have to
make it more balanced.
Yeah, you have to balance it. And studying, like, so in this book, unlike bitters where I had a dozen plus homemade recipes, I really tuned it down and have four DIY recipes for making your own Amaro, which are really looking at a seasonal approach, like winter, fall, summer, spring.
Oh, cool.
Because studying botanicals can be a lifetime of research. And, and speaking with a lot of the people, they've been doing this.
I don't have a lifetime left.
No, they've been doing it four, five, six generations.
But you got the book now.
So meeting with these families who've been doing it for decades and generations, it's silly to think, like, I'm going to put out a dozen recipes of how to... I never want to say a clone, like, this is your Fernet clone or this is your Averna clone. It's more taking inspiration from the seasons. And even in Italy now, you know, originally it was really driven by local, regional Amaro, using local ingredients. And then going back, you know, generations, the spice trade opened that up. So you're using ingredients now new to you, not necessarily regional. But the truth in reality, we discovered in interviewing people and talking about it is... You know, the history of that kind of mom and dad making their own Amaro at home is really not happening much anymore. And they see Amaro as their grandfather's drink or their father's drink, and they're drinking Jack Daniels and kind of poorly made cocktails.
Red Bull.
Yeah, and we did discover some great cocktail bars in Italy. But when we were telling people, you know, we're doing an Amaro book, they were sort of like...
Oh, you're historians?
Yeah, well, they were like, why, and stuff. So talking to producers, I think it's like when we'd visit these places that had a wall of unavailable in the U.S. Amaro, you know, I was geeking out and just imagining, like, what would you guys do with all this different Amari? And
drink it.
And meanwhile, they're like, what are you looking at? What do you need? And, you know, it's like three or four major brands are what's selling there, and most of it is exporting to, you know, like, to other countries. And American bartenders especially are leading the charge in you showing the versatility of Amaro beyond just a digestif and using it in cocktails, either as a base or as a modifier to bring sweetness or balance or a fun herbalness. So Italian producers are loving the American craft bartending scene, and they're bringing it back to Italy and other places. But that's the thing about it. It's like this, you know, historical tradition, but I'm looking at it filtered through my American point of view. So I'm not pretending you know, I've been doing this for hundreds of years like these people have. But in a lot of places we visited, we were the first American journalists, so to speak, that came to see them. Like Maletti does tours for school children just to show, like, a factory. You know, like, this is a factory. And meanwhile, like, they rarely have, like, journalists to come and just spend the day there. And even when we went to Amaro Nonino, they're known primarily for their grappa, and no one had really come to talk about their Amaro. So we saw
that a lot. It's a beautiful Amaro. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
And it's a gateway Amaro. It's definitely an Amaro you can turn people onto.
Very elegant expression, and using their grappa knowledge to bring it to it. So it's just, we found, like, a lot of them would make grappa, or they'd make limoncello or vermouth, and Amaro was one
thing. Or anisette. A lot of make anisette.
Yes. The Maletti's, like, come in from anisette, and that's what they're known for. Oh, and they have an Amaro in the portfolio. So we're seeing some interesting things going on over there. But yeah, it was, and like you said, with Jim's book, we shared a gentleman rivalry because our books came out in the same day. But I think, you know, I want to, as a writer, you don't want to write a book and just have it be disposable or disappear. And so seeing it have the legs and seeing it put to use, even after someone might read it or dip into it or having it, as Souther said, as a resource, a reference, has been a real honor for me. And seeing it myself and having people like text me photos from their travels, it's really cool to see it out there in the wild.
Yeah, you know, the one of the things I've noticed about the Bitters book is that's really cool. And like you said, as a reference book, I've noticed that book more so than others, people taking the liberties of writing, taking notes in the book, like, yes, writing their notes in the book. Have you noticed that too?
Yeah, well, I really said that.
Tweaking recipes.
In the DIY.
You know, yeah, it becomes their own.
Yeah, the DIY recipes, I say right in the book, these are templates, you know, like use what's in season, use different things. And I get a lot of feedback like, oh, I dialed up the citrus in this. It wasn't, you know, I did this and that. Or instead of coffee, pecan, I just did the pecan. And I really like that. And even cocktails, too. Like, you know, I have cocktails in the books that might come from a bartender. I'd say like 10% of cocktails are my own, and the rest are contributions from bartenders or restaurants. And, you know, when I may have, you know, Jeff Golly at Prime Meats, like, make one, put on the menu, and he's like, oh, we dialed down the sugar a little bit, or we did this. So I am up for that. You know, like, I don't think anything should be draconian or fundamentalist in that. And I have that, you know, that's source code freedom. And like, here's the concept. And I follow the recipe exactly as the bartender gave it to me. And I test it. And I don't really make tweaks unless I have a question like, did you mean this or that? Because sometimes translating a bartender recipe to sure, home use can be, you know, I'll say like, make this syrup, but it's like gallons of it. So like, you know, scaling it down. Yeah,
how can I make some?
So he's like,
take
a bunch of pineapple. I'm like, well, how much pineapple is something? You know, right. So, but yeah, so I like the freedom of templates, and it's not an excuse of like, oh, but I like it to give them a template. Here's the basics of how you do it. Here's some suggestions. And the certain things I'll say like, oh, I can only find gentian powder. I'm like, well, don't use that. You know, like, I'll give tips like, use the solids, use the wood. You know, you say hops, what kind of hops you mean. So some people come back to me with really great questions. If it's like, oh, I need to clarify that more, or really answer. But I do get a lot of emails about that where I'm making this and I can't find dot, dot, dot. Can I use this? And I'll either say yes, no, or.
Well, that's kind of the earmark of a great reference. You know, like I had a hand in writing the book, I'm Just Here for the Food, with Alton Brown. And we didn't try to write, here's a recipe book. We tried to write, here's a technique book. Here's a chapter on grilling. Here's a couple of grilled things. Now go out and grill. Right, so your book is more like, here's kind of how it's done. Now go do it, rather than here's a recipe. Stick to this. Stay in these lines.
That's kind of like, well, when we had Martin Cade on, you know, his book has like all the recipes are like, here's West Indian aged rum.
Yeah,
like West Indies aged rum, and it's like, well, here's a whole page that is a key of all the different ones that you could use that could plug into this recipe.
Right,
kind of like, yeah. Do what you will with this. Do you ever think about like doing a revised copy, like for something like nailing down like this certain hop that you were using?
Yeah,
in the bitter?
Well, there's things called, you know, corrections, where if you see,
I've been in that facility.
Yeah, no, yeah, where you see whether it's a typo, very few, or. You know, like there was one. I won't say there's any of this yet, but you know, where you accidentally. Miss, say, put ginger ale in the shaker when you meant to say top it or something. So those things could get fixed in the next printing. But in terms of a second edition with all new content and revised, I did talk to my publisher about that. And there is sort of a, if it ain't broke, don't fix it model that the book's still selling strong.
Sure, absolutely.
There isn't a reason to revisit
Probably
it.
Probably best to just start another book and put
exactly.
your
effort in that. Exactly. So, way. Yeah. So, I mean, so anything that's like a, there's never been a case to have to put an errata in where you say, you know, this was wrong or something, that, you know, you need to do this or that. But I have taken that feedback to heart, and anything that's come up, and I keep file. Even for the thing about a book, as you guys probably know, is, you know, when I turned this in like in January, I think, or something this year, and since then, like Bruto Americano has come out. You know,
that's what I was going to say. If there are any revision to the first book, Bitters, it's just that there are now more bitters.
So many. So I get things like, hey, you didn't include this Bitters. I'm like, well, that came out in 2012. You know, my book came out in 2011. Yeah. So it is frustrating that it takes so long. But, you know, I was talking to, when I first turned in Bitters, I ran into my friend Peter Meehan at Momofuku one night, and I was just like, oh, I'm stressed because, like, all these new Bitters are happening and the book's going to be dated. And he was just like, a book is a moment of time. You know, it captures this period of time because you look at the first Momofuku book, it ends with the first Ko menu, and, like, look what's happened since then.
Sure.
So I think, you know, I try to, one reason I think or I hope the book has legs too is that I don't just say, here's a great recipe for brunch, or here's a great recipe for 4th of July, I try to tell a story and a good narrative, whether it's dropping some historical facts about it or putting the drink in perspective of how the bartender came up with it. So I think that's a good head note, as they say, the text before a recipe is a way to tell a story. So I really, writing 100 plus of those is like writing a short story each time. And so I try to bring that to the technique of the actual recipe. But yeah, so bitter, like Souther said, bitters would be tough to revisit. Not tough, but it would be a whole new book. It's not just adding six new bitters. You know, there's some technique things I might tweak, but it's more about the to have a current directory. It really would have to be digital to be 100% accurate. But I do have, for this book, I've been cataloging, and like I interviewed Lance at St. George, but and he didn't tell me he was launching it. You know, he was just like, I'm working on something, but it was rumors he was going to do a Fernet, and then suddenly this Bruto Americano Aperitivo comes out, which I love.
Right.
And another thing I talk about in the book, and personally I'm excited about, is the domestic Amaro, the American-made Amaro. Because Italians, many Italians I talked to were like, it can't be called Amaro if it's unless it's made in Italy. They're very fundamentalist about that. No, I know. So they're like, Angostura Amaro cannot be called Amaro. So there's a lot going on with the American Amaro now. So like my kind of wish to see a Pacific Northwest Amaro, a Southern Amaro, you know, Southwest Amaro, a New England Amaro, it's happening. You know, all aren't perfect yet. A lot of them are getting better with each batch. But, you know, there's the High Wire Distilling Southern Amaro from Charleston.
Yes, delicious.
We just tasted this Vancouver, British Columbia Amaro. There's a Pacific Northwest Fernet I just got samples of, I tried. So it's exciting to see that. But it's also kind of sad, like, damn, I wish I could have got you in the book, you know, sort of thing. But yeah, so a long answer. But, you know, I would like to revisit it, but it's also, I'd like to move on to other things too, you know, and take on other projects.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking with Brad Thomas Parsons and Ed Anderson of the new book, Amaro. Back
to you. Music for this commercial break is brought to you by RecTech. And this one's called Fat Tony.
This show is brought to you by CloudRideVapor.com. They make different e-cig juices, and they have all these flavors that are created by a James Beard award-winning chef.
And tested by scientists.
One white coat to the next.
That's right.
So, yeah, we today have been talking with Brad Thomas Parsons of the book Amaro. And
yes.
I just had the idea, man. Like, maybe we could pitch this to CloudRide. Maybe they make, like, an Amaro-flavored
juice. Oh, my gosh, this is great.
Yeah.
What a great idea. Like a nice sort of bittersweet. Yeah, what, like Genteon? Was it Genteon?
Man,
vape?
Yeah, I think we have an idea here.
We need to get these guys in the room.
Yeah, seriously. So if you go to the website, it's cloudridevapor.com. You can get 20% off of your purchase with using the code SPEAK, as in the speakeasy. So go check them out.
CloudRide.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy, and in the studio today, we have Brad Thomas Parsons and Ed Anderson of the new book, Amaro. And we talked a little bit about the, you know, over the past 5 years since Bitters came out. But let's start getting into some of the, without giving the book away, let's talk about some of these Amari that you encountered on your travels. Because
yeah,
I'm sure, like you know, when we go to, like, Tales of the Cocktail or go on a Kentucky, like, bourbon tour, that we end up with too many bottles to, like, bring home with us. I'm sure you probably had the same problem.
Well, in the book, the one thing I talk about in each section, everything in the book is available in the United States. So cool. I'm not talking, it's not an A to Z of every bittersweet herbal liqueur in the world. I mention a lot you can't get, but it's frustrating even in a cookbook when you can't get a certain ingredient. So unlike bitters, which are smaller bottles, you can throw, you know, I have a little kit I can carry around, a bag. You're talking about these big, you know,
full size
liter
bottles. Potable bottles, yeah.
And so when we went to Italy, and I pack heavy as it is, you know, like I already had a big giant bag. And in the generosity of many of these Italian families we were meeting, we would leave with 2-3 bottles, you know, and some of it was like some rare stuff you can only get in Italy. And it was just comical, like the trunk of our Volvo was just like rattling with booze. And sadly, at the end, you know, I think I made 13 or 14 bottles back, and I had to buy. We went to a sporting goods store and bought like a couple of like Ocean's 11 style Adidas bags, for like heist bags, and we kind of spread out our bottles. So it started. We started in Torino. You know, we landed in Milan and drove up to Torino, and. Fulvio Piccinino, who, you know, some people call like the Dave Wondrich of Italy. He's a drink scholar, specialty is vermouth. He's written a book on futurist mixology. He's a scholar on vermouth. And we just found the generosity of people saying, oh, you should talk to so-and-so. So as soon as they said, hey, we're coming to Italy, he was like, meet me, I'll take you. And he wanted to take it. He took us to this distillery just outside Torino, and it was called Antica Distillery Quaglia. And it has been around for a very long time, and the recipes date back to 1890. And they were making vermouth, they were making grappa, and they had so I brought like this Caladol is a bottle that they just kind of gave us as a have a thanks for coming guys kind of trip or gesture. And I there's no information on this online at all. And so when you taste it, you know, you kind of see like it really so Fulvio was telling me that it was like a digestive they made, like the old guys had after dinner drink that they brought back. And now they only make about 500 bottles a year. It only goes to the local bar.
Wait, bottles or cases?
Bottles. 500 bottles that go to the local bars and restaurants. So you're only really going to drink this if you're in that area, in that region. So
I'm going to pour lightly. So for 500 those, bottles.
Yeah. So for those kind of things, I really just like that it's a little piece of history, a little great story coming back with you. So if you want to give that a taste, you'll see it's
cool. It's really light.
Bursting menthol off the nose menthol. As I'm pouring, and the whole room's starting to smell like menthol.
And the mint is local. It's to really show the sense of place in Piedmonte.
Holy crap, man.
It smells amazing.
So it's light, too. The ABV is
it's only 16%.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Whew.
So would you use that at the bar, Souther? Or is it?
Absolutely. Wow, this is just super bright mint. This would be a mint replacement. You know, we don't use anything fresh at Amore Margo with the exception of twists from citrus, but this would be a great way to get a minty, you know, bright menthol flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Like in place of like a creme de menthe or something like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, which I also don't use.
Right. But
and this is something, sadly, he was telling me recently that, oh, they're thinking of stopping doing it because the financial crisis, more restaurants are closing in Italy and bars. And so it's fun. For me, that's worth risking spilling in your bag and getting back and paying extra baggage. And then this other
smuggling.
One. And then truthfully, a lot of things.
Bootlegging.
A lot of things I brought back were because of cool labels. You know, where you'd say like, I don't know, you know.
I'm always fascinated by
Amaro
labels.
Yeah, so like you see a deer in a mountainside and that tells you this is going to be an alpine Amaro.
Yeah, there's always a story to
there's
be told.
A little hint or clue. So this lion, the one with Amaro Martina. So this came about after our trip. We were having dinner with Fulvio and this guy and his wife come over and just join us. And turns out he's the great-grandson of this Amaro maker from 1908 in the same region just outside Turin. And they stopped production, and then he found original bottle in his mother's wet bar and started making small batch versions to share with friends and family. And then he brought it out fairly recently. It's all natural. It's got a little vanilla cardamom taste to it. And it's the proof's a little, it's a 38% ABV. So these were two that like Fulvio turned me on to that they say it's, you know, frustrating you can't get here, but I think it's exciting to have a little taste of the region in particular. So we, like I said, it was funny and sad and funny, but near the end, like when we were finally boxing up our stuff, you know, shipping stuff would have been impossible. So right. The hotel housekeeping got some nice tips in terms of not anything super rare.
But the problem with that is you have to imagine that they came in and they were like, what's this? Garbage.
Yeah. And, you know, one in a,
what's this? Something my grandmother would have drank? Out it goes.
And I think the biggest that we found, too, which was really interesting, going to the more corporate places, surprisingly, were very corporate. You know, you weren't allowed access to the archives. You were only allowed certain parts.
Well, these guys are, I mean, I battle with these guys all the time with their super secretive nature. Like,
oh, absolutely. You've got proprietary recipes and a corporate.
The Colonel's 11 spices. No one's ever going to know.
But we found the smaller town, the smaller the family, it was almost like a grand parade. Like when we finally made to Ascoli Piceno to see the Maletti's family, you know, there's Cafe Maletti in town named after their great, great grandfather. You know, it's like that they're part of the town and they've been there for years and years and years. And they brought back like the town's head bartender from, he was on vacation. They had him come in so he could work with us and local bartenders came out to see us. So it was such a warm welcome. And the biggest surprise was, you know, we did the tour, we interviewed them and they brought out these giant handmade wooden cases where they did a bespoke one and only first time they did a large format Maletti Amaro for me and a large anisette for Ed.
Amazing.
And so we were like flabbergasted, but we're also like, how the hell are we going to get this home? And so, you know, weather would break. So we left him behind and it broke my heart. And I was but there's a happy ending. But so he's sort of like, they will always be there for you when you come back. And then Mateo, when he came to the States, he surprised me. He got it here somehow. So I'm happy.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So I'm happy.
He's awesome.
Yeah. So he is. They did do a number two that is in the States now that because people saw it when I posted photos that will be cracking at my book party. So
nice.
We'll have some nice large format Amari.
Cool,
yeah.
Man.
That's amazing. Yeah. I'm talking to Maletti and Varnelli about going and visiting in the spring, actually.
Oh, it's great. You'll love it there. It's amazing. Yeah, I've interviewed Orietta Varnelli in New York. Mm-hmm. She was a little upset that we were there, but our schedule, it didn't see her, but our schedule was down to the yeah. day, each day. So, yeah, it's people, and people since, like one of Damon's friends, a bartender friend who I met recently from San Francisco, I was able to get him into the Distillery Branca tour. And so some things, they're not quite open to the public, but if you can ask nicely or put your name down. So I say it's not like going on vineyard tours. It's very much they're kind of like stopping their business and letting you in.
Right.
Not all have visitor centers and galleries. Some do. But yeah, Lucano just opened a visitor center at their distillery, so they're very excited about that. So yeah, I think they're, you know, the younger generation are really the ambassadors for the brand, while the fathers and the second and mothers we found were more reticent to talk. They just kind of like, enjoy it. We don't really want to talk about it. Like,
Eduardo Branca in my bar a couple of weeks ago when he was in town. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of hard starts. And he was like, we got to come to the distillery.
Well, you remember we brought the Eduardo gave us the personal tour. And we didn't realize who it was at first. He kind of came down, saw this guy come down the stairs. And we thought he was just like coming from marketing or receptionist. And then his father, the other count, came by. And I was like, And they addressed him as Count. And I'm like, oh, that's Eduardo. And then, because he kind of was a little, at first he was like, this is that. And then he warmed up. But at the end of the tour, you end in the bar. And he's like, do you want a Fernet Branca drink? And I was like, well, we have to do a hard start. So we brought the hard start to Milano. And he kind of winced when we shot it. He was just like, he's like, you Americans and your shots, you know, we sip here. But it was a lot of fun to do that there. Kind of bring the ultimate boomerang from
yeah.
Brooklyn to Milan.
Awesome. The hard start, which by the way is 50-50, right?
Yeah.
Menta, Branca Menta and Fernet Branca.
Yeah, 50.
Oh, cool.
There's a fun little, you know, in addition to the history, survey of purveyors and cocktails, one section in the book has about a dozen recipes. I'm calling, you know, 50-50s, equal part, usually Amaro or Spirit Amaro. The hard start is really what started to turn me onto it, but there's the Ferrari, the Maserati, these kind of combos. And it's a real quick and
dirty. CIA I saw was in there.
It's a real quick and dirty section.
Tony Guffey.
It's a lot of fun. So I think, you know, you can just do them room temp, equal parts, pour. You can chill them. When I have the Nomad, it's a little more elegant when they present them. You know, they stir them and strain them. But it's just a fun way to keep Amaro going in a way that's like, you know, there's so many. And the one thing I really took away from this, too, was the lack of standards and how it's served. You know, it's like even within families, like grandpa drinks it warm, so-and-so drinks it with seltzer, someone likes it with ice, someone likes it neat. And if you go to a restaurant, say, can I have an Averna? you don't know how it's coming at you. It could be in a brandy glass, a wine glass, a rocks glass. It could be chilled. So I think it's all people say, like, what's your favorite one or how do you like to drink it? It really is about the sense of place, who you're with, what the occasion is. But certain ones, like the sweeter ones, I like a chilled glass for a little viscosity. But sure. neat is fine. Lucano and tonic with lime has been like my summer drink. Just yeah, so it's too. A way to bring these.
I was just thinking this would be great in tonic. The one we just had, the Calidol minty and then tonic.
And so it's just a great way to bring these like perceived end of meal murky digestifs into the front of the meal too. And we've talked a lot about like the botanicals that go in them are really doing the same thing to your body. It's about when you're drinking it. So if you're hungry and you start with one, it's going to open up your appetite and get you ready. While if you're full, it's the same kind of action. What's happening to your body is doing, depends what's when you're drinking it, is doing different things.
But jump starting your digestive tract.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's cool, man. It's science.
It is science, and it's also just stuff that we stumbled upon as a species and didn't really understand why it was doing what it was doing, but it does.
Magic.
Yeah, it is magic. It breaks my heart. You know, when I travel out of country, which is only I've only got a few experiences, but it breaks my heart to think about what you were just talking about, how, like, for instance, when I was in France, it turns out that less than 0.5% of all the cognac produced in France is drank in France.
Yeah.
They don't drink their own juice, right? So you're telling me that, like, that a lot of the bartenders are like, what do you want to drink that for? It's what grandpa drinks. But yet over here, we're, like, clamoring, crawling over each other to get to it.
Well, I talk about it in the book, but there's one.
But we drink our own juice. We drink bourbon and rye, like
absolutely.
Yeah,
we have pride, and we own everything else too.
We were at this cool cafe called Cafe Luce. It was designed by Wes Anderson, so it looks like one of his movie sets. It's like turquoise and pink, and it's sort of a cafe. So there's soda fountain, there's drinks, and we went in there and ordered a bunch of homemade bitter sodas they had. So Ed was setting up a shot at the table, and this older woman, Italian woman, was watching us, and she was like, what are you two doing? What are you Americans doing? And we said, oh, we're shooting a book on cocktails. She's like, cocktails, you do it best in America. Why do you come here to shoot cocktails? Yeah. And so it was like, it was pretty funny. So, but yeah, it was a surprise you say, like, when you're like, a whole, a book on tomorrow? Why? Sort of thing. So it was interesting. But yeah, so I think that's, if we're the benefits of that, it's great, but it would be great. They've moved on to other things, but I hope the tradition and the popularity of the topic, rising tide lifts all boats. So I think hopefully we'll see more. But I think the Americans are really embracing that concept of let's have a regional America tomorrow.
Yeah, love that it's finally cracking into our vernacular as a drinking group. So the book is going to launch on the launch party is here in New York City on the 5th.
Yeah, October 11th is when the book comes out.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be out on the road on the Bitters Trail. I've got some fun events lined up with some bars and restaurants and a combination of guided tastings and talks and more bar takeover parties, but partnering with some fun people across the country. So
maybe we'll get you in to do another signing at Amore Margo.
I'd love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but I hope to see you guys in around the New York stuff.
Yeah, the party is on the 5th at the
Well, it's invite only. That was open to the public.
There's no party. But, no party here.
He didn't hear.
Walking. On the pub date on October 11th, there's an open to the public event at Maialino.
That's the one I was thinking.
Doing a happy hour takeover. So there'll be some friendly price Amaro cocktails and some gratis Cicchetti snacks coming around. We're going to do some complimentary Amaro flights and tastings. Should be fun. That's at 6 o'clock on the 11th.
At Maialino. Yeah. Yep. Great restaurant. Great Amaro selection they have there already.
Yeah.
This has been enlightening. Can't wait to get the book. Here it is in front of me, but I can't wait to get into the book.
Well, you guys, needless to say, you were a big part of you guys through writing Bitters and researching Bitters, and you're excellent resources for this. So that your generosity of time and interviews, talking to you, and your hospitality all around, behind the scenes and in front of customers, is greatly appreciated by me.
Happy to help as always.
Well, thanks for getting this information together and compiling it. So.
And packaging it so beautifully also.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I wanted to touch on one thing, though. Bitters took the James Beard Award, and this book is extremely handsome. I haven't read it yet. How do you think you're going to be in the running again?
I can't answer that. No. As I said, the cocktail book landscape is a lot more crowded than it used to be. There's some not to look at it that way, but there's a lot of my colleagues have some strong books coming out this season and earlier this year already. So I really can't look at it like that. If it happens, if I'm nominated, if anything, I would be honored, of course. But when you publish a book, you can't really think like that.
Yeah,
like I didn't with Bitters. It was a nice surprise, and I was thrilled to death and forever grateful. But if you go into it saying I'm going to win an award with this, you're usually going to wind up not happy. So
right.
I appreciate the question, but I think I can't I can't say that without sounding like an idiot. Yeah, what I really think.
Well, it's certainly a handsome book, and we can't wait to get it. It's out by 10 Speed Press. Do want to mention before we wrap up the show, Damon, we have the Heritage Radio Network fall season launch party to go to coming up on the 25th at La Pizio. I'm probably butchering that pronunciation.
La Pizio.
La Pizio. There, it sounds better like that. Which is over in the East Village. You can go to the Heritage Radio Network website and grab yourself a ticket. Come over. We're going to have some great sponsors there. We've got Plymouth Gin, Amaro Montenegro, Cutty Sark Prohibition, Novofoco Cachaça, as well as the Copper and Kings, all sponsoring. So we're going to make some great cocktails. There'll be some food. Tickets are available on the website. Please come see us and launch our new season. Yeah. And I'll be just around the corner at Amoria Margo doing my monthly event, 2 weeks notice, which is where we close the bar down, take 60 reservations, and do 3 cocktails paired with snacks as a prefix. Super fun. So lots of stuff is going on.
Lots of stuff's going on.
We're moving into the fall busy season. Let's get it on.
Yeah, man. And we've had so many authors on the show recently, man. It's been awesome. We've had like an official book month on Heritage
Radio.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing. Yeah, so
definitely check out the book tomorrow when it drops.
When it drops on the 11th, yeah. Thanks, guys, for being in the studio with us today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming back, man. And congrats on the book. It's beautiful, and can't wait, like Souther said, can't wait to crack it. Until then, I guess we're
wrapping up today.
We're wrapping up today.
Yeah,
so
next week's episode will be another book, Robert O. Simonson and his book, A Proper Drink.
Yep.
All right.
Book month.
Book month. Nerds.
All right. So check out Heritage Radio Network for many other programs like this one. And until then, cheers, guys.
Cheers, guys.
Stay better.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music. Save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.